You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 5. You guys know the drill. This is the Punk News Podcast, episode 499.666. It still ain't 500 because, we told you last week why it isn't. So we're
sensitive individuals, Adam. We're sensitive to political climate.
We are not trying to take undue space for our dumb bullshit when there is more things happening. That said, it's 9:54 p.m. on a Thursday, and it ain't harming anyone that we're going to record an hour of bullshit. So that's what we're going to do. So, joining me on tonight's show from, I guess a few hours north of me, newswriter M. Moore. Hello, M.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Not too bad. How are you?
Not too bad. So you and I are both in Ontario here. We have, our daily COVID case count. We had 189 new cases today, which is pretty damn swell considering, you know, the alternative.
Yeah.
And speaking of the alternative, down there in fucking Plagueville, USA, Mr. John Gentile.
Where the slime lives.
That's Morbid Glad. You wouldn't know them.
No. So how's Pennsylvania doing? Pennsylvania's all right, right? Like, you're not...
Pennsylvania's doing fine. Delaware County, which is where I live, is actually doing great. But listen, knuckleheads need to be wearing their masks, and they need to just hang out for like another month or two, and then it'll be cool. But people are like, I gotta go get chicken wings, and I gotta go get, you know, I don't know, jalapeno poppers, you know, and also science doesn't exist, and also I need to just go out and do whatever I want. I can't sit inside for 3 weeks, even though we already sat inside for 12 weeks, so another 3 or 4 weeks ain't gonna hurt you. And so John can't go to the punk rock flea market and sell his records in July. Adam,
I'm not my fault. I'm doing my thing. But man, it's scary. It is legit scary. I mean, I know I like the rag on America because like that's what I do. But holy shit, like you guys are. I mean, not your locality in particular, but we keep looking at Florida, and like, you know, Florida has a population that is not dissimilar to Ontario, and the difference between what's going on down there and what's going on up here is just insane. It's like looking in a funhouse mirror right now, and that's not to say we're out of the woods, that we don't have our problems, because we certainly do, but oof, it's looking dire, man.
Here's a question. Why is Greenland considered part of Europe when it is clearly part of North America? That's one thing I never understood.
It's all about who owns it.
Is it though? I mean, is that why it's considered Europe? Like, that doesn't make sense. So a continent is determined by location. You know what I mean? And Greenland is basically Canada, but Greenland is west of many American cities, but it's considered Europe. That makes no sense to me.
That is an incredibly off-topic.
Who decided that Greenland should be Europe? Like, for real? Who made that call?
I feel this is like a Viking thing.
Man.
Although the Vikings rolled into Newfoundland, and that didn't become part of Europe, so I don't know.
I'll tell you what's wild, man. What's wild is the Vikings made it to Canada hundreds of years before Christopher Columbus. That really is crazy.
Yeah, I've never been there because I haven't been to Newfoundland, but there is like they unearthed their village in Newfoundland. It's a little place, I think it's called like Lanceau Meadows or whatever, however you would say that in French. And it is there's like the architectural remains of their, I don't know, like their log cabins or whatever the heck that they built when they came offshore. It's pretty crazy.
Imagine being a Viking and rolling up to North America and then like running into like Native Americans, or being a Native American and like seeing Vikings roll up. That's like the craziest thing ever.
I feel that like the Vikings probably weren't like wearing horns and like Thor shit, right?
Yeah, but they were tall, skinny white guys with beard, which is something that the Native Americans probably never seen before. And Native Americans were of a different complexion than the Vikings had ever seen before.
Yeah, it's probably akin to seeing like greys, like aliens have landed on your shore in their dragon boats. Oh, what are we talking about? Okay, so the
and do you think being a Viking was awesome, or do you think it sucked?
I think if you're a man, it was good. They seem to have a good run of things.
I feel that at any point in history, if you had to be a human being on a boat crossing the Atlantic Ocean, it probably sucked.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah.
When you got to take a crap, you got to go off the side. You know. Oh man, it's brutal.
Because like they crossed in the North Atlantic too, right? So that ain't a fun. That's not. That's not like a. You're not like sailing around the BVIs there. Like that's fucking insane. Icebergs
I would never be an ancient explorer. I'd be like, who needs it? You know what I mean? I love that there's many Egyptian – this ancient Egypt is somewhat unique in that there's many Egyptian texts that say don't explore because Egypt is the best place, which it probably was at the time. So it's just funny. Like there's so many like Egyptian texts of like scholars and priests saying, listen, you're going to go somewhere else and it's going to suck. Stay in Egypt, it's the place to be, you know?
Now, is that because the Nile was like a literal oasis? So if you kind of went in any direction, like, except for, you know, the Mediterranean, you'd end up in like horrible desert?
In fact, Adam, that is why the Egyptian word for death and west is the same word. Because if you go west, it's death.
Ooh. That's kind of like what's going on right now. West is death. All right. So anyways, yeah, this is
that's not true, Ed. You can't say it. I mean, coronavirus is all over the planet.
Yeah, sure. But like, would you rather be in, I don't know, like.
I'd rather be here than China.
Switzerland?
Switzerland's the West. What are you talking about?
Well, I'm saying like West of Europe, right? Like England being the center of the Europe. Earth.
Well, I'd rather be in Netherlands, but I mean, that's even during non-corona time. I just want to be in the Netherlands.
Oh, well, see, I don't think you're going to get there. This is I appreciate the level of off-topic stir crazy that's happening right now, because this is what is happening in every conversation that I have with my children at the moment. So my 5-year-old will routinely kind of walk up to me and motion that I come down to his level, and I'll hunch over and look him in the eye, and I'll be like, yeah, and he'll be like, when the coronavirus is over, you're taking me to Value Village, which is a thrift store up here in Canada. I don't know, but he's like, you're taking me to Value Village, and I'm going to buy a car. Like a toy car, right?
That sounds cool, man.
Yeah, but he tells me like 6 times a day. And I'm like, okay, fuck. Uh-huh. Like, this is not good. You are not going to make the coronavirus go away any faster because you really want to go shopping for junk. So... But listen, man,
Value Village is a good place, man. You need to get on your son's tip, man.
I am. Here's the problem. You take a 5-year-old into Value Village, they don't want to stand there as you rifle through 900 shirts. They want to go look and play with all these like dirty toys in the weird corner where strange people hang out of your sight. And you can't just let your child wander away in Value Village, at least not the one in Niagara Falls, because there's folks in there who you maybe don't want to hang out with your 5-year-old. So I go in there and I end up getting to look at something that I want to look at for about 8 seconds. And then I have to go stand there as my kid like fondles all these dirty toys. And yeah. I gotta go without Adam. I gotta go without him, but I can't because coronavirus.
You can always reach out to podcast at punknews.org. We love getting your mail. We got a couple of short letters here. This is from Marlo. Marlo says, "I'm a lead singer of a punk rock band, Los Candidos, from Bogota, Colombia. I'd like to go to Colombia. Colombia seems like a cool place. I just dropped by to say hi. I'm a huge fan of Punk News and the Punk News podcast, and I wanted to know if you guys would play my song. We recently released our last album on Out Loud Records. I hope you like it. Hope all is well. All right, so Mario, I will play your song later on in the episode. This is from Nick. And Nick says, what if Joey came back? Like that. Hi, y'all. Thanks for making this global pandemic easier to stomach. I think you might enjoy this song. Between these sweet lyrics and the podcast, my spiritual well-being is covered. And this is a track by someone called Colin Ray. So what we will do at the end of the podcast, Adam, I will donate my two songs to both Mario's song and Nick's song, and we'll do that. And you can reach the podcast at punknews.org.
That's very cool. John, do you know that my family history has a Colombian connection?
Cool. Is that how you made your money, Adam?
So my family came over from Italy, and they landed at Ellis Island, and they got off the boat, and they wanted to go, you know, become proper New York Americans, right? And this would have been, I don't know, like 1910-ish, earlier maybe, right? And they went and they got off the boat, and my great-grandmother had an eye infection or something like that. And America turned them away because they didn't want these dirty Italians coming in with their eye infection. And they turned the whole family away. And that is not how my family ended up in Canada. They somehow turned them away, and they went down to Colombia and were there for a while. And then eventually,
why was Colombia? Colombia's
great. Don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, I want to find out. Like, what's the reasoning where, like, if you get stopped, if you can't get in to New York, that the next logical thing for you to do is to, like, wing it down to South America. It makes no sense to me, but that's what happened.
Well, you know, I mean, a lot of Italians went to Colombia, you know. There's a lot of Italians in Colombia.
Maybe it's just that. It's just, like, that was the place to go, I guess, right? So, they went down there, and I don't know, like, what got some antibiotics and then came back. I'm not entirely sure how it worked. This is one of these, like, one of those, like, weird asides in your family history where there's no end to the story. Like, there's no satisfying reason. It's just like, oh yeah, then they went to Colombia for a number of years and then they came back. It's like what? Like,
that's not a short boat trip either. You know, in 1910.
No, you know, right? But yeah, it's pretty intense. I want to hear some Colombian punk rock. That's cool. I want to hear that. Yeah. I'm hearing all this weird Colombian music, but it's not punk rock. It's like weird, like, art rock and stuff like that. Like, Lito Pimienta is, like, a huge artist in Canada right now. She won the Polaris Prize last year. She's, like, she's great, but she's not, you know, playing punk. So I'm curious. I want to hear this.
All right. Well, there you go. All right. Well, listen,
John, I feel like we've said some controversial ass shit on recent episodes, and no one has written in a letter to tell us that we're horrible. That, or you are shielding us from
what have we talked about?
I don't know. Like, I feel like we've, maybe me in particular, like I've expressed all kinds of, like, anxieties about things, and no one's.
Have we given, like, controversial opinions about, like, circumcision or something like that, or?
No, I think that we've had a few episodes where, like, we've gotten on and sort of just, like, complained about, like, the intensity of online culture right now. And I was fully expecting, like, someone to write in and give us, like, a full throated, you know, buck up idiot kind of thing. You know, where, like, you're being a bad ally kind of thing. And
talk about that. I'll be controversial right now.
No, don't just be controversial. I'm saying that no one has written in to take some innocent thing that I have said out of context to yell at me, and I was curious. I'm not saying for you to invite it upon us.
I think maybe people might agree with what we have to say, and unfortunately I would argue that it is difficult, even though if I agree with many ideas online, It is difficult to have a truly open and online discourse in the internet right now, and even in society in general. And I feel as though speech, you have to be more careful now than you did 15 years ago, which the negative effect of that is people aren't expressing their true opinions, and therefore certain people talking to each other is almost people portraying characters of themselves and not expressing what they truly want. And therefore, certain ideas kind of get buried down. They don't go away. People just kind of keep them secret, which I also fear is how we got in the situation in the first
place. Oh, John, it was very measured. Not what I expected.
And also, I'll tell you what I hate. I'm annoyed by a lot of people. I feel as though I'm more annoyed by the average person than the average person. I'm very irritable.
Well, I mean, these are irritable times, right?
That's true. That's like the whippiest name for an album ever. Not like H tomorrow. Irritable times.
Irritable times. You know? It's like an itchy situation. All right. So we have mail. No one yelled at us. That's nice. Are we gonna play a piece of music? We can jump right into these stories. What do you want to do?
Either you or Em are gonna play a song, or we'll just jump right into the jam. Jump right into the story.
Em, you got something on deck?
I do. Yeah. The song is called Death, and it's by a band, and they're called Pleasure Venom, and it's off their 2018 self-titled EP. They're from Austin, Texas. They're like a garagey experimental punk kind of, and they just have so much energy and they sound really cool, so enjoy.
right, that was Pleasure Venom with Death. All right, we're going to start talking about some of the stuff that went on this week. We are going to start with our pals at Live Nation, because they cannot stop, can't stop doing stuff, John. They can't stop.
They can't stop being worse. Every time you think they can't be worse, they're worse.
It's almost like they're looking around and they're like, there's this plague, this virus, this super virus is really got people's attention. And we had people's attention. We had people's ire, and now they're all focused on the fucking COVID. That's not what we want. So Live Nation's really trying to belly up and get people to hate them more. So there's the thing. They want artists to take pay cuts so that they can turn a bigger profit. So according to Rolling Stone, Live Nation has a plan to help itself out. And it's trying to surmount the financial issues that COVID-19 has created for itself. And it's going to do this by convincing artists to accept less money so it can have more money. Now, for context here, in 2019, Live Nation generated a total of $11.55 billion in revenue, which was up from $10.79 billion the year before.
And so, I'm going to pause you. That's not tickets sold. That's money that Live Nation raised for itself from the sale of tickets. You see the difference there?
Yeah. That's their cut, right?
Right.
So earlier this year, Live Nation sold debt to the U.S. government as part of a low-interest bond program. In recent quarterly reports that were issued before COVID-19, Live Nation also stated that it was continually seeing more profit from increased surcharges on ticket processing fees, and recently proclaimed that these cost increases were the, quote, highest ever. So in a statement that they sent to talent agencies, Live Nation stated that it is going to revise its policies as per the following. And this gets a little bit technical here, but just follow me around. So they said guarantees should be decreased by 20%. They said if a concert is canceled due to poor ticket sales, it will give artists only 25% of the guarantee, as opposed to the 100% that promoters are currently expected to pay. If an artist cancels a performance in breach of the agreement, the artist will pay the promoter two times the artist's fee, which is exorbitant and not standard in the industry or anything like that at all. But that's going to be the price of doing business with Live Nation, who can we call Live Nation a monopoly? They certainly is. Live Nation controls a lot of the larger venues and things like that. So
and medium.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Large and medium venues. So, I mean, if you are above the bar band level in the U.S., you are probably dealing with Live Nation, and now they have all this shit that they're lumping onto artists. And it's not like artists have necessarily had a easygoing time, given the fact that all of their income streams have disappeared as well. So anyway, so if you want to go to punk.news.io, you can read Live Nation's entire letter that they put out to agencies and dig into that. So, yes, John, this is horrible, but like, what's your read? Are you on Live Nation's side now?
Listen, Live Nation is doing the right thing. I support that 100%. As we said before, there are many, 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 many more worse things in the world than expensive tickets. That being said, this is firmly within the oeuvre of the Punk News podcast and punk rock, so we're going to talk about it. Live Nation is horrible. They're a monopoly. They've three times was it the Senate or Congress? I forget who House of Representatives or Senate. I forget which votes on monopolies. Maybe they both do. At any rate, I think it's Senate. They, or at least Congress, voted that Live Nation is not a monopoly, even though they own all the huge venues and the parking lots and the medium venues. And if you're anybody, a medium or larger band, your only option is Live Nation. I don't see how that's not a monopoly. That's because they're on Live Nation's payroll. However, Live Nation justifies its fees. They say, well, we have such high fees because we provide such a great service and because we bear all the risk. And this is my same argument with CEOs that get insane bonuses and salaries. Okay, fine. I don't agree with that argument, but let's accept that for the purpose of argument. Then how come when things go bad, you're like, well, you know, we roll snake eyes this time. We have to bear the pain. They're like, no, we got to change the plan again and make sure the artists, you know, pay more instead of us. This is predatory. First of all, it completely shifts any risk on the promoter onto the artist as a whole. And anybody that's throwing a concert at the small or medium level, like that's not the idea. The idea of a promoter is A, the promoter provides the money, but he also bears the risks. Therefore, if it pays off, if he gambles right, he gets more money. But if he doesn't gamble right, he gets less money. And why does the promoter bear that risk? Because myself as a promoter can say this, the promoter doesn't actually have any talent. The artist has the talent. The promoter is basically a walking money bank, you know, that rolls the dice and does the best he can to get people interested. So that's the gamble, is that you're the promoter. You're not really a talented person, but maybe you can make money off this art because you're willing to bear the risk. And the artist, who is the talented one, isn't bearing the risk. Well, this shifts all the risk onto the artist. That is, the promoter can cancel the show at any time and only pay 25% of the guarantee, which is 20% lower than it was before the previous contracts. And if the artist cancels, then you have to pay the promoter 200%. And, of course, the promoter is Live Nation, which is insane and exorbitant. And I mean, if I was an attorney, I would seek to strike that clause of the contract in a lawsuit, because that just seems completely unfair and obscene. And there's a word for that in contract law when something is so excessive that it's unenforceable. I forget what it is, but that's what it is. And so, but will Live Nation get away with this? Yes, they will, because there's no other party to challenge them for the business, and they own Congress, you know. And honestly, most people that go to concerts only go to one or two concerts a year, so they don't care if they spend $90 when they really only had to spend $25 or $30. Because this is their one or two nights out at a concert this year, and $90, I guess that's what a concert costs. So, and further, it underscores a very real issue that I've been talking about for the past 10 years, which is becoming more and more true, in that the middle class is getting shrunk down, and there's poor people that can't go out and do anything like this, and then there's super rich people where $300 for a concert is not a big deal. So it's obscene. It's if anything, this is a symptom of a much larger underlying cause. Live Nation is rotten. And I advise everyone to read the quarterly reports where they're bragging that their ticket surcharges are, quote, the high. I was reading the quarterly reports. I mean, I wasn't surprised because it's Live Nation, but they're bragging that their fees, which do nothing, are continually the highest ever, which is insane. And so listen, the only way you're going to defeat Live Nation is to vote with your dollar. The problem is most people that go to Live Nation events might not be aware of the underlying issue, and so they might not be voting with their dollar because they're not aware that using their dollar is voting at all, if that makes any sense. That being said, there are a lot of medium shows, and if you can help bands not go to Live Nation and go to independent venues, and if you can, you know, maybe scam your way into a Live Nation show instead of paying, I think you should, because this is just rotten and is a problem. In the grand scheme of things, it's a small problem, but it is a problem.
Yeah. I disagree. Em, you going to step up and defend Live Nation?
Oh, no. No, no. I agree with everything that's said.
How about this? I've actually so up been enjoying this, and I shouldn't, because I know I'm playing with fire. We've posted a couple of – oh, I meant to post the Tom Petty thing. We didn't post that, did we? But we can talk about that. But anyways, is whenever we post, like, you know, Trump-related stuff, or even, like Skrelly, or like capitalism completely out of control stuff, these weirdos that have never been to the site before like pop up. Like this guy popped up. He says, Live Nation represents many artists. If those artists feel like they're being screwed, they can choose new management. Seems to me you gullible saps are being bamboozled by rich rock stars who want to cash big paychecks and blame someone else. A, as if Live Nation isn't richer than any rock star. And B, who are these weirdos that are defending Live Nation? You know what I mean? Like who is this person?
Yeah, that's a weird hill to die on, you know, is defending them.
There is the argument is that he sees himself, I can guarantee you this is a man, he sees himself as an alpha male, where I shouldn't be, you know, held back from capitalism and making the money that I want to make, that I can make. I can't be held back from my potential, Ayn Rand style. You know what I mean? Except for, I guarantee you, this guy works at like like a Blockbuster of a Blockbuster. I guess he works at a Blockbuster, you know, and makes, you know, $7.25 an hour. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad thing to do, but this guy is not a guy that this guy sees himself as, you know, a Jeff Bezos, but he's really just the guy working at a Blockbuster. So he's choosing to buy into this false dream so he doesn't feel bad about himself. And he's doing that by attacking people that are actually making cognizant points. You know, he's putting on a football jersey and say, I play professional football too, when really he's just in the stands. Does that make sense?
Hey, I'm in the tech industry. I know all sorts of these people.
You do?
Oh shit. I don't go to things anymore because I found a way to be entirely antisocial. But when I did, used to like go meet people that were like other programmers and stuff like that. You can't be in that industry without being infected by this, like, this dream that you are going to be like the entrepreneurial Ubermensch, and that just by your sheer grit, by your the word in the tech industry they use for it is hustle, because you've got lots of hustle, and because you're going to grind harder than the other guy, you're gonna win capitalism, and you're gonna make all these, you know, amazing disruptive things happen, and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you know, none of that shit happens. But man, people buy into that, and it absolutely feeds a personality type that just like drinks this like cult of business kind of thing. It's super weird being a it's super weird to encounter being, you know, someone from my end of the spectrum. Let me tell you. Speaking of not that, Lawrence Arms, they have a single, a second one that's just come out from their upcoming record, Skeleton Coast. That record's coming out July 17th on Epitaph. This song is called Last Words. It is a Neil Hennessy sung track. I believe the prior song that we shared from this, which was called PTA, was a Brendan Kelly track. So this is a Neil song. So it is decidedly more melodic because it's one of his. And the people on Punk News, they're talking about it. And, you know, sometimes our comment sections are pretty quiet, but this was not one of them. People were in there having conversations, talking about it. So maybe the Lawrence Arms still manages to hit on that very particular org core funny bone that may be pretty quiet these days still. But anyways, you recently started a Lawrence Arms journey. Did you check this one out? Do you have a read on it?
Yeah, I did. So, the last podcast I was on, you recommended me a song, and it was a Quincentuple Your Money song. So I listened to that, and I listened to it a few times, and I really liked it, and it was good. So then I was like, okay, I'm going to listen to more of the band. So listen to more of the band. And then, like I listened to, PTA again, just cause like, you know, the first time I listened to it, it was kind of like, what is this? So I listened to it again, and you know, it was okay. But this one I like a lot better. Listened to it a bit today. Like, it gets going through your head too. This song makes me want to check out the album like way more than the other one. The other one was like good and decent and everything, but this one just has a better feel to it. And I liked the lyric video. Thought it was cool with the, like, the hourglasses and the little animations and stuff. So definitely check more of them out. I get their appeal.
John doesn't.
I don't. Oh. I don't dislike the Lawrence Arms. I mean, like, they all seem like nice people. Just when I hear this music, I realize the music is usually very literate and that they make lots of references. Although I would say when your entire music, and I'm not saying this is the Lawrence Arms, but I know some college professors and other guys that like make music, like they're like, oh, and this song, references this obscure Russian novel from 19. It's like, well, a reference in of itself isn't that interesting unless you do something with that reference, which is usually what these guys fail to do. Now, I'm not saying that's Lawrence Arms. With the Lawrence Arms, man, I don't hear any danger. I don't hear any threatening. I don't hear any power. I hear very poppy, sing-songy kind of stuff. And if people like it, that's fine. Lawrence, as we said, it's strange that people want to die on the Live Nation Hill. Adam, I'm not a fan of Lawrence Arms, but I'm not going to die on that hill. If people want to listen to Lawrence Arms, good on him, I says.
That's very diplomatic. That's not old John. Old John would just be out there throwing fire for...
That's true. That is true.
Oh, this is John. John beaten down by the pandemic, just trying to... Just trying to connect.
Just trying to make it through.
Just trying to make it through. Tiger Army's still around. No, Tiger Army was still around.
I thought they were broken up like 15 years ago, honestly.
I'm not, I don't begrudge it. I was, shit, man, like 2001 or whatever. Like I had never heard any psychobilly ever. And coming across Tiger Army was it fit perfectly into my Hellcat Records phase that I was in at the time. And man, I remember that, like, this was before the easy availability of like every piece of music on the internet. I heard like one or two Tiger Army songs on a compilation or something like that, and I was just completely fascinated by what was going on there, and I couldn't find any more, because like you couldn't go into a record store in Niagara Falls or whatever and get a Tiger Army CD at the time. So it was one of those things that, like, it took me a while to actually get my hands on what that was, and let alone anything else that was in that genre, because turns out all of that psychobilly stuff was like weird German bands and stuff like that. It was like Necromantics and all this crazy Halloween stuff. And of course, turns out most of it's not very good, and most of it is kind of cartoony, but...
Really? Kim Necroman with the Kid and Play haircut?
Turns out Kim Necroman is not maybe high art, but that said, I still have a soft spot for Tiger Army, even though I've totally not followed them over these past few years. So in any case, they released a video for the song Last Ride. It's off their album Retrofuture, which came out in 2019 on Rise Records. So you can check it out. It's on Punk News right now. They've also canceled their 2020 tour dates. Surprise, surprise. Due to COVID-19, if you had tickets, you can get a refund. A statement from the band reads in part, "Live shows as we knew them will be one of the last things to return. Rather than guess, we're going to wait until we can confidently schedule new dates. Everyone's safety is the most important thing." And you can find that announcement and the video and everything else over on Punk News right now. John, any Tiger Army thoughts? I've learned that Neil from our sister podcast there, what is it, too old to punk or something like that. He's a big Tiger Army fan, so I got to talk to him about that.
I hope you guys have fun talking about Tiger Army.
I'm gonna enjoy that. Did you ever have a psycho phase, John?
I didn't have a psychobilly phase. However, I did have a phase where, boy, I'm really excited that this band is the next track on the Given the Boot comp. But I will say, within the context of the Given the Boot comps, the first three, which are excellent, and even maybe the fourth, Tiger Army did have a unique, fresh sound that perhaps, when considered with similar type bands, wasn't as unique and as fresh as it seemed to be. But in the context of the Given the Boot bands, I would say they were the creme de la creme of psychobilly and were extremely enjoyable. Power of Moonlight, I think there was another song they had about being vampires and stuff, but I dug it. And I will say, Em Moore has a lot gone for her. She's young, she's getting involved in stuff, and she's really able to harness technology. But I do somewhat pity Em Moore for not being able to enjoy the Given the Boot phase of life, Adam, where for $3.99, you get this comp with 25 tracks on it, and they're all kind of awesome. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the great thing about that was that you had no idea, well, at least I had no idea, which of those bands was even real. Right.
Yeah.
Or like, so, and Given the Boots were the label compilations that Hellcat Records put out in the early 2000s.
I think she knows what Given the Boot comps are.
I don't know. She, I don't know. I'm not sure how old anyone is or what's culturally relevant to people. I mean, I expect my children to know what the Give Them the Boot comps are, but they don't. They just stare at me blindly when I talk about them. But like, so you'd get one of those Give Them the Boot comps and there'd be a song like, say, like the Silencers' Bad Policeman, right? It's on the first one. Now, I had never at the time heard of the Silencers. I didn't know who that was, right? Now, is the Silencers a real band, John?
No, it's like Rancid. Isn't Silencers just Rancid with Smackers or something?
Yeah, it's like Vic Ruggiero and some of the Rancid guys, and apparently they recorded an album worth of material, but like it was never released, and who knows, right? It was basically like that was the song, right? It was a fucking awesome song, but like that was the song. So, and most of the stuff that was on those Give Them the Boot comps, you'd run into it and you'd be like, oh, this is sort of weird and fun and awesome, but like, I have no idea what this is. And like, I naively would like wander over to the mall and go to the CD store and go to the S, and I'm like, oh, there's no Silencers CD here. I guess I don't know what that is, right? And the Tiger Army things were sort of like that at the time, where I'm like, oh, this is a weird, unique sounding thing, but like, I couldn't get any context as for what it was. But I feel like, John, like there was a moment. No, and so coming back to it, like I romanticize that like level of ignorance that we had like pre-internet, right? Where like you couldn't go find any of that stuff, and even if you did, it was so rare that you would get a hold of something that even if it was stupid, it was kind of special. Like there, like what I mean by that is like I heard after I'd heard Tiger Army, I somewhere read. Some, you know, maybe it was like, I don't know, maybe it was like a copy of fucking Punk Planet or Maximum Rock and Roll or something like that, right? Where like someone would have mentioned in conversation that oh, this band sounds like, you know, sounds like Necromantics or these other things, right? And I'm like, well, I don't know what those bands are. And I somehow off the early dial-up-y internet got like an MP3 that took me like 3 hours to download of a song called Back from the Grave, which was one of the Necromantics' first singles back when they were just like a German band and they didn't have any like US releases or anything like that. And it's totally like a stupid, goofy horror punk song, but I thought it was so cool, right? And there was, and it was partly just like the hunt, right? Or like, oh, I've got a song from this band. And I wonder, like, did we, if not for technology, John, was Psycho sneaking up to be like the new ska?
No, and here's why. Do you know why ska was so popular, Adam? Do you know why?
The hats.
Because it's fun, you know? And although psychobilly is kind of fun, it's a little too self-serious. Like, in ska, you can be a terrible band and people will still have fun. You can be a band that's like, yeah, you know, we're just going to jump around. You'll still have fun. It's young people, music aimed at young people. And what do young people want to do? Have fun, to their credit. By contrast, psychobilly, it's like if you don't, you know, comb your hair right, if you don't play your upright bass, but that's shaped like a coffin, right, then you're a poser or a sellout. There's no such thing as a poser ska, third wave ska band. And that's why
ska was successful. So you're saying, because third wave ska had no dignity.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Oh God, I remember the first time that I saw a legitimate greaser at a show, like who had like the fucking like 6-inch tall, you know, like perfectly triangular wedge of cheese pompadour, and was wearing like 50s rock and roll clothes and stuff like that. And I was amazed that this person even existed.
I'm gonna be a dick, and I'm gonna say something controversial here. But like if you're like a greaser, and I hope we don't have FL. If you're like a greaser and you got the hair thing gone, you know, and you got the jeans with the thing flipped up and the brown leather shoes and the jacket, and you keep the comb in your back pocket, you know, isn't that really just dress up? You know what I mean? Like, aren't you just playing pretend? Like, don't you really just want to be the Fonz? You know what I mean? I feel like that'd be like if I dressed up in like a black leather jacket with big black glasses that had like a red beam that shot out from one of them, and I pretending I was the Terminator or something. You know what I mean? Like isn't that what that is? You know, like it's not 1957. You know, you're not you know, drag racing down the strip to win Joni's heart. You know what I mean? Like, you work at Sears. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. I'm sorry, Geezers. I feel it's dress up, but there's worse things in life. You know, there's worse things in life. Of course, I mean, most punk is dress up. Like, with the guys in the DB clothes, you're playing dress up. Like, you know what I mean? Like, honestly, the freakiest guys are the guys that, like, just kind of dress normally or totally weird, but not within any central set of rules. Man, I'm rambling.
Eh, whatever. It's this isn't a real episode. It's like 0.499 point whatever. So there's no rules, John. There's no rules.
Have you ever considered a dressing greaser, you know, with the red bandana in your hair and like the blue denim shirt, you know what I mean?
Bull Rosie the Riveter.
Have you ever considered doing that?
There was a time where it was like, oh, that would be cool. And then well, it's funny. It was that, and then I got into punk music, and then at the time, like, I was listening to a lot of Sex Pistols and stuff, so then I was trying to, like, ooh, I'm gonna dress like them, and I made, like, an I Hate Pink Floyd t-shirt, and, like, I had safety pins on everything.
And that's cool.
It was really, really good, but I think the goal is don't let the clothes be your personality.
And, you know? Have you ever walked to Arnold's Diner and then wanted to play a song in the jukebox, but you didn't have a nickel, so you kicked it and it started playing a song?
And the exact one I wanted.
Nice, nice.
I've got to say that this, it might just be in my genes because I am a
Your G-E-N-E-S?
No, my G-E-N-E-S. I am a member of the Italian diaspora that comes from a family of auto mechanics, so I feel that of anyone, I should be allowed to rock a pompadour, just a little one.
Well, do you?
I sometimes. I could do a pretty half decent pompadour, John. Not gonna lie. I can do
don't
it.
Don't you like for a pompadour, like, no, I'm thinking of a jelly roll. Maybe I'll start doing a jelly roll.
That feels like you need a lot of product to make that happen.
You need a lot of, what do you call it, that goop you put in your hair. What do you call that stuff?
Like pomade.
Pomade, yeah.
So yeah, there we go. That's a segue to nothing. So here we go. So all right, last thing before we play another piece of music here. Public Enemy, John. There's a Public Enemy story. You want to you want to field this one?
Yeah, I'll as best I can. So I'm gonna rewind a little bit. So listen, people. Chuck and Flav of Public Enemy have been butting heads really ever since the band started. But it really amplified about 4 or 5 years ago when they put out an excellent album, Nothing is Quick, Nothing Moves Quick in the Desert, which Flav said that Chuck D never paid Flav for and didn't even let Flav know that Public Enemy was putting out an album. So Flav sued Chuck D. Then earlier this year, Chuck D said, we're going to play the Bernie Sanders. Public Enemy is going to play the Bernie Sanders rally, and it's going to be great. And then Flav said that we don't support Bernie Sanders. I never said that. You know, I need to get paid, which I respect Flav. And then people are like, oh, you must love Trump. And then Flav says, no, I hate Trump. You know, and so Chuck D and Flav got into a very public battle on Twitter and in interviews. And Chuck really hit below the belt. Like, Chuck said Flav needs to get his drug control under problem. Flav doesn't know the difference between Bernie Sanders and that football player Sanders. I forgot his name. Like, Wallace Sanders or whatever his name, you know. And so, like, Chuck was really smacking on Flav, like, pretty hard. And then, on April 1, Chuck D put out a statement that said, Flav and I are actually getting along. It was all a big hoax because we know that Flav's fame is decreasing. So the point of this was to increase Flav's fame. Oh, and also, I'm putting out an album, but it's not a Public Enemy album. It's an Enemy Radio album. And Enemy Radio is me and Professor Griff and Jaheed. Enemy Radio is Chuck D, DJ Lord, and Jahi, and the S1Ws, whereas Public Enemy is Chuck D, Flavor Flav, Riff, DJ Lord, and the S1Ws. So it's basically the same band, just without Flavor Flav. But he said, but Public Enemy's still together, and it's all big hoax. We're still pals. And then on Twitter, like within an hour, Flav was like, no, we're not. That's a total lie. I don't know why. Oh, and Chuck D also said, we concocted this cockamamie scheme to show how not trustworthy the media is. And then Chuck, then an hour later, Flavor Flav was like, Chuck's lying, and we definitely still are arguing with each other, so I don't know why he's saying that. And, like, Chuck D really did look like an idiot, because it's like, why did you think this plan would work that you hadn't even gotten the other person to agree with? So, and the album came and went, and the enemy radio, like, no one cared about it at all. It was an okay album, honestly, but, like, the lifespan of that album was all of 3 days. But then, so it seemed like Public Enemy might have been, like, over. You know what I mean? It was getting, like, really ugly. Well, I guess we were all wrong. So maybe Chuck D's cockamamie hoax story was real, because Public Enemy just released a new single. It's called State of the Union, Shut the Fuck Up. It's got Chuck D, Flavor Flav, and DJ Lord. And also it's got DJ Premier providing beat. And it appears as though Chuck D and Flavor Flav are getting along again. Who knows? You know, when it comes to the Chuck D v Flavor Flav battle, I'm actually on the Flavor Flav side, even though people think he's kind of a joke. I think I, as a true connoisseur, appreciate the depth of his genius. And honestly, I think he's more likable than Chuck D. But I can also appreciate how it can be very annoying to deal with an erratic person in your band when you're just trying to make your band be a working, active band. And so I was very surprised by this. The song itself is almost secondary. It's okay. It's okay.
I'm not going to attack your chronicle of recent
Here's the thing, this is what, honestly, like I still like Chuck D, but every year I like him a little bit less and a little bit less. And here's why. Chuck D is supposed to be the anti-Trump, right? But he's using the exact Trump tactic. Just keep lying. Just keep lying. Just keep lying until people don't even care about what the truth is, because they're exhausted and they've already got their mind made up. And then you can just do whatever you want, which is the Trump tactic. And that's kind of what Chuck D did here. He just kept lying about his and his Flavor Flav's battle. And so now Public Enemy's back. But, like, no one even wants to investigate whether or not Chuck D was lying or Flav was lying, just because we're all so sick of it. And I think that's not a good look for Chuck D, who's built his entire career on, quote, telling you the truth. The irony being he's attacking Trump in this video, which I approve of attacking Trump. I just think it's not one of 2020 does not seem to be Chuck D's banner.
Yeah, I'll let you have that. You are clearly the Public Enemy scholar among us there. John, this is one of these songs where, like, the chorus doesn't work for me, but the rest of it does, and it's kind of infuriating to have to sit through. I think the shut the fuck up part of the chorus to me just doesn't seem to, like, it has no flow. It's just there. It's just like extra yelling. Whereas you could go through and, like, cut that whole aspect out, and it would just work much better to me. And I don't know if that means you just, like, if that means sonically I'm coming down on Chuck D's side, because I'm saying, like, you know, if we just, like, you know, kept all the verses. But yeah, I don't
know.
You got
it. You got Flav. Flav is the magic. You got to have Flav. I do agree that this chorus is I like how the chorus is actually an anti-chorus, and that it doesn't rhyme and it repeats itself. I dig that. That being said, to me, the song doesn't have any real momentum. And I sort of hate to say it, but not really. Is Run the Jewels extremely heavily influenced by Public Enemy and KRS-One? Run the Jewels also doing this exact kind of art way better than at least this one thing. And with more style and grace as well.
Yeah, I guess that's, I don't know. I mean, hey, I appreciate the sentiment. I mean, by all means, you know, give.
But you have to be Flav. Flav looks cool, doesn't he? He looks so cool. Flav is so cool.
Sure, but you know, but what are you going to do? It's you know, I'm not going to load this particular tune up on my. On my iPod and go for a jog or anything like that. It doesn't work. Don't work for me.
If you were at the record store and you saw it for a dollar on a 12-inch single, would you buy it?
I'd buy a 12-inch single for a dollar.
How about two?
Like, buy two singles identical?
No, would you buy the single was $2?
Hmm. You could probably keep bringing up the number, and I'd hold on for quite a bit, but then I would probably I'd stop trying to value it as how much is this music worth, and I'd start looking at it by going like, oh, is that going to be a cool cultural artifact to have sometimes? Like every once in a while, I'll pull out like a Rock Against Bush CD, and I'll be like, ah, look at this, right? Remember this? When that was all of our problems. So yeah,
Exclusive World Inferno French Society song, Adam, Expatriate Act.
Yeah, there were lots of cool songs on those comps, but there's just like, it's so weird now. Like I look at them and I remember when, like, remember when the enemy was like Donald Rumsfeld, like Donald Rumsfeld was a good enemy because he was at least sort of rational. John, it was like having your enemy be like Gold Cot. Right. Like it was he was evil, but like you could understand why he was evil. He wasn't just like flailing around.
I would say, though, Rumsfeld didn't have the style or even the bohemian that Gold Dukat has. You know, Gold Dukat's fairly bohemian, you know, and that's what makes him interesting. Is he is very cultured and he's still who he is. You know what I mean?
Emor.
Yes.
Do you know who Gold Dukat is?
I do not.
You do not need to.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, any thoughts on the song? I mean, you mentioned to us earlier that you were really into the Run the Jewel stuff.
Yeah, I've been listening to. I think I've gone through everything, but like Meow the Jewels. I listened to half of a song and I couldn't do it. I will try again, but.
I've got that double vinyl. Yeah.
That's one of those records that is exclusively made for John.
Have you listened to all of it?
I did one. Okay. And more. Chuck, your Flavor Flav. Whose hill are you going to die on? Who will you defend to the death?
I'm gonna split it down the middle and go DJ Premier.
Ah.
Because I liked the beat. Overall, it was good. I had the same thing with the chorus, how it kind of, it didn't really fit, but like at the end, it really fit, you know? So if they kind of kept that towards more of the end, I think it would have had more of an impact, but I didn't mind the song overall. And, hopefully they've settled their differences and they're back to being friends or getting along at least, but it's hard to know. In that way, or if it was just like we're presenting a united front, so you kind of forget about the drama that happened, you know. But hopefully, they put out more stuff like that, like in the attacking Trump vein.
That's something we could all use more of. All right, we're gonna play, I guess, some music before we hop the second half of the show here. John, are you were going to save the listener submitted tunes for the end?
To the end, yeah.
All right, so we recently on Punk News shared some news about a piece of writing that you can buy in physical form, a pamphlet that is called Black Dots, an Afropunk Primer, that comes from a Halifax-based musician named Chris Murphy. Let me pull up the actual story here so I'm not just talking out of my ear, but let's do this.
And while Adam looks that up, of course, Black Dots, a reference to the famous Bad Brain demo album. Excellent album.
Yeah, here we go. Okay, anyways, so Chris Murdoch, he wrote Black Dots and Afropunk Primer. It was put out by Pentagon Black, which is this label that is out of Montreal that's run by the guys that play in a duo called The Famines, which is kind of like a cool garage punk two piece. So one of The Famines, Raymond Bessinger, is a graphic artist by trade, so they do a lot of kind of like interesting paper based music projects. They put out this series of comps a few years ago where they were all like paper compilations, they were called, where basically you would get this like giant newsprint art piece that would unfold to be like poster sized, and somewhere on there would be a download code for the music that was on it, but that was the artifact that you would you would have to get the digital music was the paper stuff. So they did all kinds of cool, weird things like that. So this is in that vein. They've decided to start doing these information pamphlets, and they were raising money for Black Lives Matter by selling these things for like $2 a pop, and then like plus $1 shipping. And on it, they have Murdoch's Black Dots essay, where he kind of goes into his own experience as a, you know, as a black musician within the punk scene, and what that means for him, and what his interactions with people's been like, and how people treat him and how they react to him like that. But he also goes into the history, and you know, he talks about of course Bad Brains and Death and Don Letts and polystyrene and X-ray Specs and Neville Staple and Limbo Golding and the Specials and Ranking Roger and all this kind of stuff in here. He goes through all kinds of like, you know, history of black musicians in the punk scene and kind of how that we got to today. So A, you should buy a copy of Black Dots because it raises money for a good cause and is just neat to have a nice little paper zine-y thing in your life. But also a lot of the bands that Murdoch himself has been in are cool. So I'm going to play two songs, actually, because they're super short, from a band that he fronted in 2014 out of Halifax that featured members that went on to be in the Bougie Boys, which is one of my favorite bands. So this is a band called Word on the Street. They are a like tough streetwise hardcore band, and you know, super fast, super mean, lots of breakdowns, that fun stuff. So I'm going to play the first two songs from a EP that they released called Street Spirit on Suicide Records in 2014. The songs I'm going to play are called Controlled and then Around My Neck. This is a total of like 1 minute and 37 seconds of music. So here we go. We'll be back in a sec. That was Word on the Street. John, let's talk about toys.
Yeah, toys.
So Rancid is making has a doll. So
it's an action figure.
Okay, so Rancid is entering the highly competitive toy market. The band, through a retro toy producer called Reaction, who has also released toys that feature
action figures
that feature iconography from the Misfits, Motorhead, and Slayer, is now releasing a Tim Armstrong action figure. However, this reimagines Tim Armstrong as a skeleton. So it is a skeleton with a mohawk and you know, punk spikes on his leather jacket and cuffed jeans and Doc Martens and all that. So there's a Tim Armstrong Skeletim action figure that you can get. He has a guitar. He has a Molotov cocktail as well. That's very important. And it comes in in a very fun, like cardboard and plastic blister pack kind of, you know, thing like you would have got when you were a kid buying your whatever you collected. So anyways, you can find a picture of this thing on Punk News. John, you wanted to talk about this in the context of a few other stories that we have here. So should I jump through the three of them and then we'll bridge that? Or do you have a specific and direct reaction that you want to give to,
No, we can go through all three at once.
All right. So item two here, the Screaming Females, one of John's favorite bands.
Yes, definitely.
And a band I very much appreciate as well. They're releasing a limited edition. Sorry, they're re-releasing their limited edition tape, the Chalk Tape. Now, the original version was sold only as a cassette with 100 copies pressed. The new version is on vinyl and is going to be a one-time pressing. The digital version you can grab now, but Don Giovanni is going to be putting the vinyl out in July. Going to be pressing the vinyl version in July for a release this fall. So they're taking this rare one-time cassette that they've had, and they are putting it out on wax. Item number three, Integrity.
One interesting thing about the Screaming Females record, Adam, it also features a new business model, which actually might very well be the way for labels to go, and that they're only pressing as many as are pre-ordered. So you can pre-order through July, then they're going to press them, as opposed to pressing a bunch and then trying to move them.
That feels very safe to me. I mean, if that was the case, I would make more stuff. So Integrity, number three. They are re-releasing their debut album as an 8-track. So their album, For Those Who Fear Tomorrow, came out in For Those Who Fear Tomorrow, sorry, I put a weird pause in there, came out in 1991 as a CD. The cassette version was released the next year, and a vinyl pressing released later in 1996. So now the band has decided that the only medium left is a fully playable, genuine 8-track tape, and they are making it. It's coming out from a label called Bitter Melody, and it's going to be available later in the summer. So, John, so we got Integrity making an 8-track. We have Screaming Females taking their rare cassette and making a pressed-to-order set of records. And then you have Rancid making a supermanly action figure that's definitely not a doll. So what's the through line?
The through line is that I think more than ever before, as it becomes easier to produce these kinds of things, bands are making weirder and more unusual stuff and more trinkets, to make extra income on the side. If it was 1997 and independent records and CDs were flying off the shelves, would Screaming Females be releasing this limited edition item that was purposely meant to be limited edition? Because it's not considered to be like an actual album, which is kind of a fun thing for them to do. Probably not, because they'd be selling way more normal records. And so are these trinkets, are they fun? Are they cool? Are these perhaps the answer to keep bands afloat? Or is it just bands having fun, you know, the Rancid thing? Is Rancid doing this because they're making money or just because they want to have fun? Is Integrity expecting to see an influx of cash from 8-tracks? Or is it just a wacky, fun thing? The irony being is I can almost guarantee you that 0% to maybe 1% of these 8-tracks will actually get played. And I bought two of these three items. Which two did John buy?
I'm going to say that you bought the Screaming Females record.
Indeed, I did.
And I'm going to say that you bought the 8-track.
Indeed, I did.
Ha, there we go. On any of these three products,
I would say all three very much are products, and I don't even mean that dismissively. I mean that factually, they are products, something meant to be bought. You know what I mean?
So I'm curious in your perspective on this, as a bona fide young person, because as a as an 30 something, late 30 something, we were infected is not a good word to use these days, is it, John? Can't say infected. That's
You can listen. That word is like 8,000, like 4,000 years old.
I guess. I don't want to be. I mean, there's people are dying in this. Anyways, we were infected by the Gen X integrity wars, right? Where we didn't necessarily we weren't on the front lines of it, but we were just indoctrinated in this, you know. Bands have to be independent or they're going to be sellouts. And if bands are working with a major label, then, you know, they're turning their backs on the scene. You know, people are slashing the tires on Against Me's van because they signed to Fat of all labels, right? Like we, you know, Rancid all of a sudden signs to Warner Brothers. What does anything mean anymore? You know, all your favorite bands are all of a sudden signing to major labels and starting to sound like pop bands. You know, fucking H2O is releasing a pop record on what was it? Oh, fuck, was label RCA, right? Like we had all this crazy shit that we went through for a while where, you know, if all of a sudden a band had their song in a commercial, we were expected to turn around and like shake our fist at them for turning their backs on the scene and be really mad. You know, even though in retrospect, that's probably the only time that band ever got legitimately paid for anything. And I feel that like that was a very specific like 80s, 90s mindset. And I'm not convinced it exists to the same degree in like the youth of today. Like I feel that like we're a little bit more in the you know fuck, if you can get paid kind of realm. But I don't know if that's just my like a projection that I have or not. Like, do you see these kinds of things and get mad?
I don't get mad at any of them. And with the like integrity thing, like I get where that's coming from. But I think that now that's kind of like diminished somewhat, because it's like, yeah, like how you said, if you can get paid, if you want to create your stuff, you know, if you just want to have fun and release like a little skeleton figure of your bandmate, you know, do that. And I think a lot of things that were kind of viewed as unpunk either have flipped or are just kind of not really a part of things that much anymore, like in my opinion. And you know, and everything with the Rancid thing, I don't really like, I get he has a Molotov cocktail because, you know, punk, but why doesn't he have like a mini bat? Like it would be so funny if they put like a little Rancid mini bat like with him, and it'd be like the best. That was the one thing I had with that. Also, didn't 8-tracks like break a lot? Weren't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
8-tracks are really shitty.
So I don't really understand like putting that in the world. But again, if it's cool and the picture of it looked neat, you know, go for it. And the Screaming Females thing, I think that's pretty cool. And I like the how they're switching the model, like you said, John, with the only making as many as are pre-ordered. I think that's really smart. I think a lot more bands will be going that route. Did that answer your question, or did I just kind of...
No, I mean, it did. I feel like there's a lot of stuff that we got really worked up about that in retrospect is kind of ridiculous, and then like normal people these days don't get worked up about it anymore. And I wonder what we could have done with that energy if we would have used it for something useful. The funny thing about this, I'm on the Reaction website right now looking at the stuff that they make, and if you zoom in on the box art for the Rancid thing, up in the corner in small print it says like adult collectible, not a toy. And which is amusing to me. I don't know what the deal is with that. They're just trying to cover their ass. If you're like, you buy one for your kid, and then I don't know, either you're outraged that you've given your kid a tiny plastic Molotov cocktail, or your kid eats the tiny plastic Molotov cocktail.
You know, I was being a miserable SOB. I'm like, this is stupid. I'm like, you know, what does Rancid have to do with skeletons? Aside from, like, they use a lot of skeletons in imagery, but, like, Rancid doesn't throw Molotov cocktails. They're not that political. This is stupid. And then I'm like, John, why are you being such a miserable SOB? Like, if this was a Buzz Osborne, I'd be like, so cool, and I would buy it, right? I actually wanted to buy the Melvins one, I mean, the Misfits one, but I missed the original one, and they only had, like, the variants left. You know, and I'm like, well, I kind of just want the Crimson Ghost. I don't need, like, the Crimson Ghost with, like, pink polka dot splatter. The point being, it's silly and fun, and I'm all about being silly and fun. I wish it was made in America, not, you know, overseas and places that aren't so good to workers. But that being said, a lot of stuff's made over there. So I think it's silly and fun and cool.
Yeah, I can't find that I get too worked up about this kind of stuff. And, I mean, increasingly, I find that, like, if I'm at a show and a band is selling something weird on their merch table, I'm inclined to buy the weird thing. I more and more want to collect the random stuff than I want like a CD or something like that. And I don't know if that means I'm just going to one day be buried in a pile of garbage. But it feels like a more fun way to give the band some money than not, I guess.
Three things I want to mention is I sort of agree, except for, like, the thing that I want the most is, like, a rare CD with rare music that you can only get at the show, or, like, a unique cover. That's what I want the most from bands. But two other related things is, A, would you all rather have a skeleton Tim or just a regular Tim? I think I'd rather have a regular Tim, to tell you the truth, you know? And then what was the other thing I was going to say? I can't remember what it was. Oh, well.
I would only want a regular Tim if he had, like, if I could see the spiderweb tattoo on his shaved head.
What if he had a snap-on beard that you could put the beard on or not have the beard? Mm-hmm. Here's the other thing I want to say. It is, honestly, like, the reason why I had some trepidation with buying the Misfits Crimson Ghost is, like, I don't want to become a toy guy. Like, I don't want to be one of these grown guys that buys toys. You know what I mean? Is that weird, Adam, or am I being your buzz cut dad that was in World War II that doesn't understand rock music? You know what I mean?
No, so you don't want to be a toy guy because, like, there's such a slippery slope before you I'm not trying to diminish a whole subculture of people, but before you become, like, a weird greasy neckbeard kind of dude, like, it's very fraught right now to be a fan of anything, because it's just like you take two steps in the wrong direction and suddenly you're a guy that has, like, Funko Pops or whatever those things are. And I don't want to be that guy, John, I don't want to be that guy. That's my big worry. Like, I'm such a fucking nerd. Like, they have all these products that they want to sell me, and I just look at them and I'm just like, no, I refuse to buy in to your cutesy stupid merchandising of my childhood. Leave me alone. But I feel like it is, like, you know, you bend and you buy yourself like a Tim Armstrong bobblehead or something like that, and then suddenly you have, like, you know, 3,000 of them. It's dangerous. I don't want that to happen to you, John.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I appreciate that.
So do we have other things we're doing? Do we have other stories? Let's see. Where's my list? No. Okay. Bring us on home, John.
All right, we're going to play two tracks by two bands or people that wrote into us, and I'm pulling them up right now. And here some of them are that we're pulling up right now. And also, I mean, I don't need more junk, although I bought the Integrity beer. When Integrity, like, put out a beer, I bought it just because I thought it was funny, you know. Here's what I'm saying. I've got enough check marks against me when it comes to Basement Dweller. I don't need to flirt with that anymore. You know what I'm saying, Adam? You know? So anyways. Oh, go ahead, Adam. What's that?
It's it's dangerous. I mean, I don't want to beat this in the ground or anything, but like, it's fucking dangerous. There's only so much that separates, you know, cool guy music collector. And I don't necessarily mean guy. I wasn't trying to be gendered normative there, but you know, like cool person, music collector, and the comic book guy from The Simpsons. And there's just like, you know, like there's like a, there's like, there is a hair of difference between the two. And you got to walk the line.
Is the difference, that's what I was saying, is the difference if you're good looking or not, or is it something else? I think that might be the difference, to tell you the truth.
The difference in my mind is has to do with how much you project your dumb bullshit onto the rest of the world. And I feel that a lot of people that are like into some form of underground music are, you know, they naturally are cultivating their antisocial tendencies, and they just as well like close the door and go listen to their weird tapes and not talk to you. Whereas the person that's really into, like, I don't know, fucking buying Family Guy toys or something like that is probably more than happy to realize that you are also a fan of this and will talk to you forever about it. It's an introvert extrovert thing, I think.
Well, listen, podcast listeners, we want to talk to you. So you can always reach at podcast@punknews.org. And we're going to close this on up with two songs. This is Colin Ray doing What If Jesus Comes Back Like That. And then we are going to play some music from our friends in Colombia. This band is called Los Candidatos. Los Candidatos. And the track is called, here it is, Un Extraño. From Los Candidatos.
Are you trying to kill this person?
I'm trying to become more cultured. I actually can speak. Yeah, yo hablo un pequeño español. So Los Candidatos from Colombia. Thanks for writing in, fellas. Escriba nos próximo semana, por favor.
Came to town on an old freight train. He jumped off in the pouring rain. Everybody said he's insane, just a low-down, no-account hobo. He made his bed neath the county bridge. The city folks said, hey, that's not his. They signed a petition, they're gonna get rid of that low-down, no-account white trash. What if Jesus comes back like that on an old...
Whoa now, okay, letter writer, we love you and your contribution to the podcast, but I'm not going to get sued by Epic Records for playing a platinum-selling 1995 spiritual country song. So here's some punk rock. See you guys next week.
Pero feliz, todo ha cambiado y parece que las cosas que sentía al parecer no.